wondered last week here at Believe in Titans, what would happen if an already subpar Tennessee Titans offensive line had to deal with a rash of injuries? And Sunday at Tampa Bay, we saw exactly what would happen. And the result was a 20-6 loss to the Buccaneers that feels like it has now sucked all the life out of this season. Let's say it's a week-to-week league, but weekly here lately, things have been going downhill for the Titans. And if they're not at rock bottom, this feels like as low as they have been at this point in the season. They are 3-6. The only team in the AFC with a worse record is the New England Patriots at 2-8. The rest of the AFC South seems to be on the rise. Up next, of course, is the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are firmly the team to beat this year. But the Colts and the Texans are positive surprises around the league, and the Titans. We'll get into this right now. Though it seems like it's hard to see how they're going to make their way up the standings over the second half of this season. But let's work through that and some other things on this episode with the usual lineup. Former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing good this evening, David. How are you doing?
Doing great. John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
And before we dive in, let's do a little house cleaning here. The Titans have signed to their practice squad defensive lineman Ross Blacklock, a second-round pick out of TCU in 2020. He was the 40th overall pick in that draft, and he follows the addition a couple weeks ago of defensive lineman Marlon Davidson to the practice squad. Davidson was out of Auburn and was the 47th overall pick in that draft. So two players who have not lived up to their draft status, but certainly gifted physically and players that, as I recall, in that year were pretty much in the Titans realm. People were talking about them as potentially going to the Titans at maybe even in the first round of that draft. The Titans, of course, did not take a defensive lineman in that draft. They took the legendary Isaiah Wilson in the first round, and then near the end of the second round, 62nd overall, they got Christian Fulton. And then the Titans have also, in a much more interesting move, I think, in terms of the potential immediate impact, they claimed off waivers from the Carolina Panthers offensive lineman Calvin Throckmorton, who has been a starting guard in this league, including 7 games this year for the Panthers. To make room on the roster for him, they placed Chance Campbell on injured reserve. So Chance Campbell, the linebacker selected in last year's draft, the injury issues continue for him. But as we have to have our weekly discussion about the offensive line and what's going wrong, John Glennon, I'll start with you. Is adding Calvin Throckmorton maybe the move that will send Peter Skoronski to tackle finally? Are the Titans at a point where they maybe have to make that move now?
You would think, but at the same point, I don't believe it's going to happen. I still think we're following down the same path as a couple previous years. You know, remember, you know, Dylan Raiden's rookie year. Remember, we were all waiting. We were saying, but what's it going to take for them to ever try Dylan Raiden's at left tackle, you know, at the position he played, or you know, get him in a game, and they just wouldn't do it forever. And then, you know, last year, obviously, with Dennis Daly, was struggling so much, and we all asked, what's it going to take to get Dennis Daly out of the lineup? And it never really happened there either. I think we're in a similar path here that they are not planning, at least immediately, to move Peter Skoronski over to left tackle. I think, you know, Mike Vrabel said today that kind of, you know, the sense is that they're going to give Dylan Raidens another shot at left tackle, even though he struggled in relief of Andre Dillard last week. You know, my sense is that you know, maybe they just feel like they've used Skoronski so much at guard already this season. They've got him so, you know, adapted to guard, if you will, that they don't want to switch him now. That maybe that's an off-season thing, but they, you know, they don't want to put too much on the plate of the rookie right now. What in the meantime, I do like the fact that they're kind of giving Dylan Raidens another shot, apparently at left tackle this week, because I thought it was a little rough. You know, Dylan Raidens had been playing guard almost exclusively for the Titans. He didn't have a real great game in relief at left tackle. And Mike Vrabel said on Monday, you know, that Raidens didn't play up to our standards or something like that. And I'm thinking to myself, when did Dillard play up to the team standards this year? And why have we not heard that kind of comment about Andre Dillard? But anyway, this will at least give Dylan Raidens a week's worth of preparation at left tackle. You know, first team reps, presumably for the week. And, you know, this is the position that Dylan Raidens has always wanted to play on the NFL level. He's played it in the college rank. He played it in the college ranks, two-time All-American on the FCS level. So, you know, let's see what Dylan Raidens can do, maybe with at least a week's worth of preparation instead of just getting thrown in there in the middle of the game.
Yeah, and to recap, for those who couldn't keep up with it Sunday, Andre Dillard was back in at left tackle with Nicholas Petitfrère out with a shoulder injury. Dylan Raidens started the game at right guard in place of the injured Daniel Brunskill. Then early in the game, Dillard ends up out with a concussion. Raidens switches over to left tackle, and they put Andrew Rupsich in at right guard, a player who had just been he's been on the practice squad for what, a year and a half, and this was his first taste of NFL action. Andre Dillard still in the concussion protocol as practices began this week, and I would say there's very little chance he's available for Jacksonville on Sunday. So, Denard, I mean, is this just turning into a worst case scenario for the Titans in terms of, you know, having a suspect offensive line to begin with, and then even the guys who are your best guys are not available and able to go right now?
Yeah, it's bad. It really is. Not to mention, you're talking about, you already have a makeshift line to begin with, and that line now has been decimated with injuries. So now you go and with this, so they're going to go and get Calvin. Is it Throckmorton who comes from Carolina?
Uh-huh.
So do you think that that's going to be the answer? No, because now he's got to come in and get familiarized with the system and the blocking scheme, and that's going to be even tougher. So it's bad right now, David and John, and I think it's going to get worse, to be honest with you.
Brunskill is back at practice this week, and I guess there's a decent chance he'll play Saturday. But Denard, too, how much harder is that for Will Levis? I mean Levis is involved in calling out the blocking assignments, right? And if he can't trust that those guys even know what he's asking them to do, and who knows how, I assume you can't expect him to have a 100% correct rate in terms of some of these pre-snap reads. Is it asking a little too much of Will Levis to play behind that line right now?
Yes, you have a rookie quarterback that, I mean, right now, last 2 weeks, he's played great until Sunday. Listen, that's not his fault. If you watch that game Sunday against Tampa Bay, pretty much Will Levis was running for his life. He was under the rest pretty much probably a greater portion of the game. I mean, if you look at it, I wrote down, and I didn't write down no stats, but I went down and looked at some of the plays. You talking about that interception. He threw one, but they should have had two interceptions that game. And when you're talking about plays, you think about it. He had, 199 yards, zero TDs, and one pick. But when I go back, and you got to give it up for Tampa's defensive coordinator, Casey Rogers. They have two coordinators and Larry Foote. What they did is they went old school style. They blitzed the HELL out of Tennessee Sunday, and it showed up. I mean, I'm going to give you kind of an example, David. It was a second and 10. It was about, what, 6 minutes and 26 seconds left in the game. And the Antoine Winfield interception that they kind of got in the, what was that, in the third? Was it the fourth quarter, I believe? 6:26 left in the game. If you look at that play, Will had to heave that ball up there because he was getting ready to get pummeled. And that's what happens when a quarterback is under the rest and there's no clean pocket. He's just looking to throw it away, and he did exactly what you teach a young quarterback to do. That pretty much summed up the game. If you look at that defensive line for Tampa, Kancey, Vita Vea, we saw with the first possession when Tennessee was in the goal line, it was on a third and short. They could have scored, but Vita Vea ends up getting the sack, and they had to end up with a field goal. Those are the little things. And remember, it's a copycat league. So you don't think Jacksonville is looking at the way that the Tampa Bay played Tennessee Sunday and saying, we are going to blitz him from the start to the finish. And that's, you're going to see that it's going to be a trend from here on out.
Levis is one of 10 rookie quarterbacks to have started at least one game this year. He's already in only three starts, one of five who's been sacked at least 10 times. And you contrast that with CJ Stroud in Houston, for example, who has started three times as many games and has only been sacked 19 times. And I mean, the good news is Stroud and Levis are the only two rookie quarterbacks averaging better than 200 passing yards per game. As we've discussed, Levis can get the ball downfield when he has the time to do so. They need to find a way to give him the time to do so. John, I'll ask you. Levis comes out of that game with a 53.5 passer rating. It was the worst of his starts to date. Is that simply a byproduct of the offensive line not helping him, or do we sense that the league is catching up to him a little bit as he goes along here?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of both. I mean, yeah, it's hard to get past the pressure that he was under. He was, as he's mentioned, sacked four times, and not only sacked four times, but he was hit 13 times. And as we all know, that works, in terms of affecting your quarterback as well. When you start thinking you're going to get hit every time you go back, you get a little, you second guess yourself a little bit more. Maybe you start seeing ghosts from time to time. You're looking at the line at times instead of downfield, et cetera. So I think that had an awful lot to do with it. But a couple of things I think with Levis and maybe how we can handle things better too. A lot of quarterbacks are under pressure, but probably the more experience that you get under pressure, the better you're going to handle it in terms of getting rid of the ball quickly and knowing your options and that type of thing. Will Levis is in his third start. It's not there yet. You look at the numbers he had 19 dropbacks under pressure in that game, sacked four times. He went 3 for 15 in the attempts under pressure as well, with an interception, an 11.8 NFL rating. So granted, a ton of pressure, and that was the biggest factor, but he's got to learn to handle some of that pressure. He can't handle all of it, but he's got to handle a little bit better as well. And then I think too, we're seeing, he got off to that great start in throwing those deep balls, those three long touchdown passes against Atlanta. And he was hitting on everything, 20 yards downfield, big chunk plays, had some more against Pittsburgh as well. But I think the more we've gone on in these three games, I think defenses are understanding, hey, this guy's got a cannon arm. But if we can cut that off, he hasn't proven that he can slice us and dice us all the way up the field. And we see Will Levis continuing to try and throw those deep balls, and it's been less and less successful in that game against the Buccaneers. In terms of passes 20-plus yards downfield, he went 1 for 8 with an interception in those tight passes. His NFL rating was 0.0 for throws 20-plus downfield. And still in the three games he's played, he's thrown those 20 plus passes 27 times. That's eight more than any other quarterback over the last 3 weeks. So at some point, even though that's one of his great strengths, having the cannon arm and throwing the ball deep and getting the big chunks, he's going to have to realize that you can't do that quite as frequently. And when defenses have kind of figured that out, you're going to need to go short and medium range a little bit more, especially when there is so much pressure.
Yeah, and one of the more remarkable developments, I think, in all this, and I guess let's not pile on the offensive line too much farther, is but I think lost in all this, because when I was kicking around and looking at this week, this was stunning to me. Derrick Henry, in case anyone hasn't noticed, leads the AFC and is second in the NFL in rushing right now, with 625 yards, and is averaging 4.2 per carry, which is which is respectable. This is a guy who's on pace for close to 300 carries. Titans doing a good job getting his workload down a little bit, from the 349 349 carries he had last year, the 378 he had in 2020. But he's still putting up decent numbers. His yards per carry average is consistent with what it's been the last couple years, basically the same as it's been since he's returned from his foot injury, which was not as good as before the foot injury, but that's life in the NFL. And he's doing that, as always, with defenses knowing that he is their first and best option on offense. So tip of the cap to Derrick Henry, I guess, and what he's been able to do. And then, of course, you add in Tyjae Spears, who's easily been the most effective backup that he has had in years. And this team can run the ball a little bit. So Denard, is there any more they can do in the run game, or can you look at that and say the Titans are getting every bit they can out of the run game right now? They just have to protect their quarterback better.
Well, he only had 24 yards Sunday when he led
Well,
it.
that yeah, that didn't go well. They were behind all
That
day, though.
did
They,
not go well.
yeah, well, but they did. They, like coaches will say, they didn't earn the right to run the ball in that game, I think.
No, and they didn't have the right to do anything offensively when you score 6 points. So yeah, you're only judged in this league by your last performance. And for Derek, that wasn't Derek-like numbers. He had probably one good run, one solid run. Other than that, they were ineffective pretty much the whole game. I mean, when I looked at this team, Tampa just, they absolutely took Tennessee's offense right off the field from the beginning. And what I mean by that is, when you blitz and you're able to contain the pass, I mean, excuse me, contain the run, then look who you had as your leading receiver Sunday, Kyle Phillips.
Phillips, yeah.
That's not good. I mean, that's not good. And you won't win at this league. And Dave, I don't mean to get off script or anything, but this team right now, they were not only outplayed, they were outmuscled. I mean, from the start to the go, this offensive unit right now, I know we're talking about Derek being the second leading rusher in the league right now, but right now, or at least in the AFC, David, offensively, I don't see this team getting any better right now, especially with the play up the offensive line.
Well, you hear criticism of the coaching staff right now, but Tim Kelly could be calling most anything. The way that Tampa's front dominated on Sunday, there was nothing that was going to work, right?
Yeah, because it starts up front. If you can't protect your quarterback, then you don't have no chance. I mean, look at the opposite side. Look at what Tampa was able to do. Baker Mayfield played the way that he played in Nashville 2 years ago when Cleveland came down and absolutely put a whooping on Tennessee. I mean, look at the way that they were able to protect him. Look at the way that their offensive coordinator, Dan Canales, called the game. What did they do? They were able to do something we haven't seen. I mean, you think about the first touchdown that they made. I mean, that was amazing, the fact that they caught Tennessee in a blitz. They're able to run a screen, and they got him. They
They did,
flat
yeah.
out got him. And all of a sudden, what was amazing by that Was Rashad? Is it that's isn't Rashad White, the running back?
Yes, uh-huh.
So they when they caught him in the blitz, he had a convoy of blockers. I mean, that's the way that you call a game. But if you look at the way that they played up front, their offensive line did a pretty decent job. I thought Tennessee on the defensive side of the ball, the defensive front, there were a few times in the game, if you look at that play, that could have been a sack. But it Jeffrey Simmons was right there. It was a split second that he got that ball off. If he doesn't get that ball off, Baker has to take a sack. But it's just the little things with Tampa's way, and it just added up to something big Sunday. And right now, it's been like a trickle-down effect because when the offense don't play well, it kind of carries over to the defense, and we kind of saw that at the end of the game.
But here's another little oddity about this team right now, and I think it speaks to how well the defense has played and how well that how much that unit has kept the Titans in most games. Through 9 games, the Titans have the exact same touchdown differential and point differential as the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are 6-3. 6-3. You know, the Steelers are finding ways to win the game. We all know that the Steelers defense is dynamic and is carrying that team in a way that's a little bit unusual that, to have the kind of record they have with the offensive struggles they're having. But the Titans obviously it you can say you can look at those numbers and say it's possible to have a better record than the Titans have, given the point imbalance, because the defense plays well enough to keep them in. The offense has to figure out a way to score points consistently. And I mentioned it at the top, at 3-6, the only team with a worse record is the New England Patriots at 2-8. At least the only team in the AFC, excuse me, with a worse record are the New England Patriots at 2-8. And for the first time, maybe in forever, there is some grumbling, some talk in New England about the possibility of Bill Belichick being fired. And there was a report a couple weeks ago that continues to sort of, I would say, simmer. I wouldn't call it a boil at this point, but says that if the Patriots make a change, Robert Kraft would consider hiring Mike Vrabel as the best option. He might have to trade with the Titans to do that. John Glennon, do you see any possible scenario that ends with Mike Vrabel coaching the Patriots next year?
When you first hear it, you tend to disregard it. Just another of the countless rumors that you hear throughout the course of an NFL season. But the more you do let it simmer, I think there's reason at least that it would make sense. Obviously, Robert Kraft is a man who's very impressed and taken with Mike Vrabel. We saw that when Mike Vrabel was up in New England during the bye week, inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame, sitting in the suite with Robert Kraft down on the sidelines with him, wearing his red Patriots sport coat, as he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And Robert Kraft saying, you'll always be a Patriot. And Mike Vrabel was saying that he's constantly trying to recreate the locker room scenario that those Super Bowl winning champion Patriots had. He says he doesn't have it yet in Tennessee, but he's constantly striving, even though he doesn't know he's ever going to get there. So there's a lot of love on both sides. I guess the question to me is would there be enough pull for Mike Vrabel to want to go there? Aside from playing, obviously, and playing very well for 7 years there and winning 3 Super Bowls, is there enough that Mike Vrabel says, yeah, I want to be in New England? And maybe what it would come down to is simply a fresh start. I mean, you look at New England, and as you said, David, is it's not like they're world beaters by any stretch right now. They're 2-8. They've got a disastrous quarterback situation, worse than the Titans. And it's not like they've got a ton of draft picks awaiting them either. So what is it exactly that would lure Mike Vrabel up there? And you say maybe if he's looking at these two situations, the Titans and the Patriots, you know, maybe he says, okay, at least if I go to New England, it's a fresh start for me up there. It's a honeymoon up there. Everybody wants me. You know, no one's looking at maybe mistakes that I've made, whether it's personnel or coaching hires over the years. Everybody is just saying, hey, it's Mike Vrabel. You've got a long leash, you know, a year or two to do anything you want. We're not going to criticize you at all. You're the favored son coming back home. Whereas as Tennessee, you know, you're also looking at a rebuild, but Mike Vrabel probably has to share in some of the blame, not all of it, clearly, as to where the Titans are right now because of, you know, whether it's coaching personnel or coaching hires as well. You know, there's some blame for Mike Vrabel, and there's probably a shorter leash because of the struggles he's had last year and this year as well. So maybe, you know, and again, I think it would ultimately come down to, you know, if Mike Vrabel has that interest, obviously, because surely the Patriots are going to have to give up some things, whether that's only a first round draft pick. I think that would be the base, you know, or something more than that. So yeah, it wouldn't be just a simple Mike Vrabel stepping down, stepping in at New England by any stretch. So I mean, it's not unbelievably far-fetched, but I just wonder what to me if there's enough of a pull for Mike Vrabel to say, hey, Amy, I really want to go up there. Can we try to work something out with the Patriots? And you know what? That's something we'll have to see.
Yeah, you know, the other side of that is it might be a soft landing spot for Mike Vrabel, right? I mean, Amy Adams-Strunk has shown she's not afraid to make changes. Right now, this team has lost 13 of its last 16 games. If this season continues to go south and go off the rails now, I mean, the good news is there's a bunch of home games left on the schedule, and this team seems to be much better at home. But you know, Amy Adams-Strunk's father, Bud Adams, made a lot of coaching changes at a particular point in this franchise history, and she has shown some of, I would say, some of his characteristics. So I don't think she wants to fire Mike Vrabel. I don't think there's any indication of that. I don't think she lacks confidence in him, at least not at this point. But if, like I say, if this thing continues to go south, it, you know, who knows how she might feel. We saw her fire a general manager in the middle of a season, which was kind of shocking. So any kind of major changes she would make at this point compared to the John Robinson move last year, I would think would not be surprising right now. Denard, I want to ask you this though. You know, we hear all the time that people like to think from the outside, you know, a coach's message can get tiresome to players when they, you know, when a guy has been in the job for X amount of years. It's generally considered 5, maybe anything past that, it starts to get a little stale. You know, we don't know how Mike Vrabel's dealing with his players behind closed doors, but you came to the Titans in Jeff Fisher's third full season as a head coach. You were here through 5, 6, you know, that stretch. Did you ever get to a point where you're hearing, oh, here we go, yeah, it's this time of year, we're going to hear this bit again, or you know, do coaches find ways to keep it fresh for players?
I think it's not the coach's job to keep it fresh for players. I think it's the player's responsibility to keep it fresh for themselves. You are a pro in this league. They pay you a lot of money. And, you know, the thing that I love most about Jeff was Jeff really didn't talk very much. We had a system. We didn't do very much in the offseason. The offseason, he called it accountability, which means you can go do your own thing. You know, whatever. If you were Eddie George was in Columbus, Ohio, or he was in Los Angeles, California, training. For me, I was in Texas and Nashville part of the time. So what happens is nothing gets dry unless you allow it to get dry. What I mean by that, it's like the Raiders way. Al Davis believed it's the players that dictate the outcome, not the coaches. And it's the same with any organization. And somebody like Bill Belichick, for instance, who's been there for 20 some seasons, yeah, I mean, it's hard maybe for him at his age maybe the game has passed him because maybe he can't relate to the young players around him. So maybe there needs to be a change. But Mike Vrabel, you talk about what he's built here, David and John. I mean, what is he, 51 and 40 with this organization? He's what, I know, three postseason appearances, what he got here in 2018. And I mean, look at it, 15 and 7 against NFC opponents. Maybe they need to go to another division besides this AFC. But right now, they're just going through a lot. And, you know, I don't know. You know, it's the players in that locker room. Sometimes it's like you will go through those seasons where it's just you're not that good. You know, it just nothing is working. And that's what's happening right now. But when you look at this team defensively, they can win with the defense that they have on the field. It's the offense that is struggling. And that's something that Rand Carthen, he's responsible for this mess too. But also Mike Vrabel, they're going to have to point this out in the offseason. So if there's a change that needs to be made, I don't know who else you're going to bring in Nashville that's going to do a better job than Coach Vrabel has over the last six, nearly 6 years.
Yeah, the only way I could see him wanting out is if for some reason he and Rand Carthen aren't seeing eye to eye on how the roster should be built. I think anybody can see what needs to be fixed, but if they don't see eye to eye on some things, and there's certainly no indication of that at this point, because I think, you know, it is said that, you know, there are athletes and coaches who are perfectly happy to rent a reputation or whatever you want to call it. You know, like LeBron James going to the Lakers, for example. You know, like LeBron James wanted to be a part of the Laker mystique, you know, to add to his career. That's something he wanted. You know, there are others who want to build their own reputation. And it, you know, when you talk to Mike Vrabel about his time in New England, more often than not, he's going to find ways to mention his time in Pittsburgh and his time in Kansas City. He doesn't want to just be known as a Patriots guy, I don't think. And yeah, you can go to New England, and maybe he thinks New England is a better organization and he'd have a better chance of winning there. But until you win five or six Super Bowls as the Patriots coach, you're not Bill Belichick, right? If he wins one Super Bowl in Tennessee, he's king of the world here, and I think I kind of feel like that's more Vrabel's attitude, that he wants to create something that is Mike Vrabel's, not ride on the back of Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft and everything that organization has built there. So I'd be stunned if that happened. You know, with it, or I'd say I'd be stunned if he ended up there without being fired here. Again, you know, nothing will surprise me with Amy Adams Strunk at this point, but again, it's out there, it's simmering. We'll keep an eye on that. But as we come to the end of this thing, it's that time again. I mentioned the Jacksonville Jaguars are up next. Jacksonville is the team to beat in this division right now. So does anybody feel like Tennessee's going to go on the road and get them a win this weekend? Denard's nodding his head no, for those who can't see. Denard, what do you want to see from the Titans then, at least this week? What do you need to see this week?
I want to see them survive because they're going into a hostile pro. Listen, Jacksonville got embarrassed Sunday. They got absolutely whipped. You think Doug Peterson is going to allow his team to put up another performance the way they against San Francisco? What was the score? 34 to 3?
34-3, exactly.
34 to 3. And you think that this is a team right now that's struggling, and I'm talking about Tennessee offensively. You don't think that they're going to throw everything at Tennessee? They're going to try to annihilate this team. That's what you do when a team is struggling. You want to put them down early.
Yeah, I thought the same thing when I saw that score Sunday. I thought that's the worst possible thing for the Titans, is for the Jaguars to get whipped that way. Because, you know, Jacksonville had won five in a row before that. I'm sure everybody was feeling good and happy. Well, now the coaches have the players' attention again every day this week. And it's kind of like Tampa Bay, you know, going down there after the Buccaneers blew a game in the last minute against the Houston Texans. I think the Buccaneers were mad in their own way and took it out. So, you know, I'm sticking to my guns that until I see this team win on the road, I'm not going to believe they're going to win on the road. So, John, it's up to you. You feeling it?
I tried to feel it last week. I tried to give the thumbs up for the lads, but obviously I was wrong and very wrong in picking the Titans to win in Tampa. This week, the Jacksonville, they don't overly impress me. I don't think they're a very good team. I don't think there's really any part of their team that I think is just simply outstanding. But the one thing I keep coming back to is visions of Josh Allen, not the quarterback Josh Allen, but
Yes.
the edge rusher Josh Allen for the Jaguars. 9 sacks in 9 games, clearly one of the best in the business out there. And I just keep seeing visions of Josh Allen going up against, whether they try to move him around, but probably if Dylan Raiden's is going to be playing left tackle, Josh Allen is going to be seeing Dylan Raiden's a whole lot there. And I think that's going to be a tough matchup. And I think we're going to see Will Levis under a lot of pressure again. Again, I think we're going to see the Titans have some difficulty on offense. So as a result, I see the Titans going down. I think they'll keep it close again, but don't see the other win happen pretty soon. This is going to be the Don't Believe in Titans podcast, David.
Well, we
Carolina's coming
will
soon. Carolina will be in Nashville soon.
that's right, that's right. We will all be watching, as we know you all will, and we will be back to talk next week about it all here on Believe in Titans.